Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
Welcome to Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host. And today we have my friend and colleague, Matthew Gray. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, John.
It is great to have you here in the studio with us. You're going to find out during this coming hour that Matt is involved in all sorts of music here in Orange County and really all over the place. But in a lot of ways, D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble is your primary musical outlet, isn't it?
Indeed.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about this great group, now entering its 13th season.
Yes.
Wow, lucky 13th.
Indeed, lucky 13th.
Told me today. So we're going to talk about the group, how it got started. We're going to talk about Matt and his wonderful work here in Orange County. He's been a cathedral musician. He's my assisting director for diocesan choir. He's a longtime friend of mine, and it certainly was one of the pluses of moving to Southern California, of being able to be with Matthew and make music together. So anyway, welcome again. It's great to have you. Of course, we're coming from the beautiful Tower of Hope here on our gorgeous campus. And so tell us about D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble. Where did it come from?
It actually had two births. It started when I was attending graduate school at Cal State Fullerton. And the impetus for it was a conversation I had with my advisor, who's Dr. Gordon Payne. We were talking about how you get this wonderful extra sound from an ensemble that's perfectly in tune and singing non-vibrato. And he says he likened it to an angel's choir. And I was thinking to myself at that point, this is the early 90s, wouldn't it be great to have an ensemble here in Orange County that could do just that?
And well, we certainly do. Thank
we
you
do
very
now.
Much.
But it took a while. And then 2004, I was introduced to a new choir member that had moved from Texas. Her name was Marcy Lindstrom, or is her name is Marcy Lindstrom. And she was the executive director for the Orpheus Ensemble in Texas.
Wow.
And she sat me down at lunch and said, you know, you really should be doing a professional choir. So it was like a continuation of that conversation I had with Dr. Payne in the early 90s. She says, I've done it before. I know how to do it. Let's get you started. And that's what happened in 2005.
Well, you said the magic word. I was going to just lead us into, who are these singers? Where do they come from? And you mentioned that it's a professional choir. That's a little different. You're also the music director. We're going to talk more about you in the next segment. But you're the music director at the Mission Basilica of San Juan Capistrano. And you, of course, have a wonderful choir there. But this is different, isn't it? What's it like to be the conductor of a professional choir?
Well, most people would think that directing a professional choir means that every musician knows exactly what they have to do and knows how to do it. But it's really a little more difficult than that because they come from any number of choral traditions. So some of them have extraordinary skills vocally, other historically. So it's my job to kind of meld all those diverse talents together. And I've got folks from Yale, Harvard, USC, all over the United States that are relocating in Orange County in California. So they sing with me because they like what we're doing with the ensemble. So
well, and they're interested in singing in a really pitched-centered ensemble. And that's a very different thing. When people hear, I remember the first time I brought a group like Tenebrae to the United States, and people are going, oh, my goodness. Wow, I've never heard anything like this. And what they're not telling themselves in their head is that this group sings so in tune, and they can't get over the difference in that sound.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable, isn't
yeah.
it?
It's incredible. It's what really kind of got me started in this, listening to early recordings of John Rutter and the Cambridge Singers and thinking, how are they doing that? Because my education wasn't in that type of choral sound, but listening to recordings and hearing these young groups like Tenebrae, the Tallis Scholars and the Cambridge Singers, it made me scratch my head and think, I want to be able to do that. So how do we do that?
There was a wonderful book once called The Prospectus of Choral Music. I don't know if you know that book or not, but it really talked about the American choral sounds. It talked about the St. Olaf sound.
Right.
It talked about the Roger Wagner sound. It talked about the
Westminster
Robert
College.
Shaw, you know, all of these different St. Olaf, all of these wonderful choral sounds, but none of them are this.
Right.
They all had, you know, they kind of tended to be this bigger sound, this big vibrato-y, very rich American
yes.
sort of sound. sound. And then you hear a boys' choir, and of course the boys are totally in absolute pitch, you know,
right.
singing perfectly, but not so with all the men, you know, and more right. and more, especially Westminster Cathedral Choir, and even a little bit King's College, the men have gotten a little wolfier.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a different. But now there are a couple of ensembles. We've got one coming this year, Stile Antico.
Mm-hmm.
Tenebrae is certainly a great example. They're coming next fall here to us at Christ Cathedral. But every year we are happy to host the De Angelis Vocal Ensemble, and we've got one right here in Southern California that sings like this. So if you out in Radio Land have not heard a choir like this, you must come and hear them this season. And we're going to tell you exactly how you can do that in this coming hour, but it really is quite different. So where do you find these singers? Do they all have to come from England?
They don't have to come from England. That would be interesting if they did. They actually kind of gravitate towards me. And the ensemble, I've had enough core members for the past 13 years where the good news travels. So I just had a person that just finished her graduate work at Yale, had heard about us, and decided she wanted to audition for our ensemble. So
moved out this way.
Moved out and thought, you know what? I think I want to sing with this group because they have that really unique sound. They do a lot of early music. They do a lot of contemporary music. It's a good fit. It's a lot more responsibility for a singer, too, and I think they like doing also the interesting repertoire that we do, too.
Well, interesting repertoire is certainly the name of the game, and you're going to hear about some of the pieces coming in this season. But you are one of the most innovative programmers I've ever seen, and we're certainly going to talk about that. Tell me some of the highlights of your 12 years of doing this. 12 years, that's a long time.
12 years is a long time. We've been able to take and create a professional recording. You'll hear some of those tracks on this radio show. I think based on the fiscal meltdown that we had with this country with the recession, and we've been able to take and be successful monetarily with that too. May not sound like a big thing, but for a nonprofit arts organization, that really is.
Well, of course, any arts organization,
right.
whether it's cathedral concerts
here.
Or whatever it is, it's a miracle we open again the next season.
Yes.
It's just not, you know, and people say, wow, you had such a great crowd. You must be making lots of money for Christ Cathedral when they come to one of our concerts. And I go, well, we'll probably only lose, you know, maybe 10,000 tonight. You know, and they're going, what? But no arts group can pay the bills by the ticket sales.
Right.
That's only a portion. You know, we need philanthropy. We need people who are giving to our cause and who say, I really want to have an ensemble like De Angelis Vocal Ensemble here in Southern California. So it's worth it to me to make a donation to this group and buy a season subscription and just support that kind of wonderful sound. So is it all sacred music? Is it a mix of sacred and secular?
It's a mix of secular and sacred. I like to think of each program not having a theme, but kind of being a curated show, like you would take and go to a museum exhibit and see a Picasso exhibit, but see a narrow portion of Picasso's work. So when I plan programs, I plan them thematically, but I like to think of them as being curated. So there's not a theme like flowers or something like that. But what links this music together? Basically, I program music that I want to hear.
And music that perhaps you want to explore and conduct as
right.
well. You know?
We have, our mission is to do music which other ensembles are not doing, which makes the challenge of this ensemble that more difficult. But I think that's what draws the talent to this organization.
Yes, finding unusual works is always, you know, there was an ensemble in St. Louis who shall remain nameless here on Radio Land, but they prided themselves in doing all of these unknown works, and the director would race off to England every year and find all of these unknown works. And in one of the articles, it was the critic said, well, there's a reason why these are unknown works, you know, so
indeed,
this is the challenge of finding these little gems
right.
that perhaps the world doesn't know, which you certainly do in every single concert. There's a half a dozen pieces that, you know, I went to a choral concert yesterday and I found a couple new pieces in that concert. You know, every one of us that works in this business likes to find new and
right.
wonderful pieces.
I'm particularly drawn to beauty. That's one of the things that kind of makes it all worthwhile. What is going to be that perfect expression of beauty?
Well, and with these professional singers, I mean, your ensemble is just fantastic.
Thank you, John.
So if you have not heard this group, you are going to want to get yourself to their website, which is
www.theangelusensemble.org.
Yes, check it out. Right after you've gone to OCCatholic/radio, but we'll have a link on our website as well so that you can really check them out. We're going to listen to a little piece now. Tell us what it is, Matt.
It's a piece by a Swedish composer. His name's Fredrik Sixten. It's the setting of the Ave Maria Stella. What's nice about doing composers that not everybody knows is that occasionally they'll send you some of their works. And this is one of the pieces that Fredrik Sixten actually sent to us and said, hey, I think this would be a good fit for your group, and I also think you should record it. And we did just that.
And so this is the De Angelis Vocal Ensemble that we're hearing right now, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, and we will be right back with a lot more about the De Angelis Vocal Ensemble, a lot more about Matthew Gray, and a lot more music to listen to. This is Music from the Tower, and we'll be right back. To Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, and today my guest is Matthew Gray, the conductor, the founder of De Angelis Vocal Ensemble, and you're a whole lot more than that, my friend, Mr. Matthew. So let's go to the beginning here and talk a little bit about you and your musical career, and then we'll talk a lot more about the ensemble and this coming season. But did you come from a musical family? When did you start your musical career?
Absolutely not.
Me either.
I come from a law enforcement family, believe it or not. My father was a sergeant in the LAPD. I've got two brothers that are law enforcement. I've got a sister that's an attorney. So I have a big law enforcement family.
Well, and I've seen you lay down the law to the choir.
Indeed, yeah, exactly. All the time. My parents were grooming me to be a doctor, I think.
Right.
I went and had a lot of science classes in high school and had an interest in medicine, but had the opportunity to sing in the high school choir. I always liked to sing. I sang in the boy choir at church when I was growing up, but didn't really know a lot about music. And I had the opportunity to attend a festival at Mount St. Mary's College in Bel Air, Brentwood.
Beautiful.
At the Chalon campus.
I taught there a couple summers myself.
Heard Dr. Nestor's Women Ensemble sing a piece that just did it for me. This was the end of my senior year in high school. And
isn't it fabulous when there's a moment you can actually name it?
Yeah, a clarifying moment. I think it's The Snow by Stanford or Elgar. Gorgeous piece for women's voices. And I came home and told my parents I'm not going to be a doctor.
No boy.
I'm going to go into music.
How'd that play out?
Yeah, they were like, basically, good luck with that. So I had a rough start. I went to Cal State Fullerton. I didn't know how to read music. I'd never had any private lessons or anything. I had my high school music teacher help me with a solo. I sang Where'er You Walk, by Handel from Semele. And there was a hymnal on the piano, and the jury said, okay, take the hymnal and turn to page so-and-so and sing the bass line. And I looked at it and I started crying during my audition because I didn't know how to read music.
Yeah, so. I mean, many of the guests we've had in here, you know, they start at 4 and 5 and 6. And, you know,
I wish I had started
at that time on the piano. And so you were kind of a late life bloomer here.
Late life bloomer with music. So those first 2 years of Cal State Fullerton, I had a lot to make up, which was not there. Usually the state will provide you with lessons. I had to pay for my lessons for the first 2 years because my background was so remiss. But I'm a fast learner.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you're just what took me a whole lifetime, you just did in a year. So the next thing you know, you're now graduating, and what do you do? Where are you going?
Well, I taught public school for a while. I taught private school for a while. I was interested in church music starting in college. I had a friend was at Cal State Fullerton, said there was a job available at St. John Vianney's in Hacienda Heights. He knew I'd had only 2 years of musical training. He says, but you'd be a good fit. You've got the passion for the job. And that was my first job in 1980 up at St. John Vianney's in Hacienda Heights. And I've had a church job every day of my life since 1980.
Wow.
So what was that, 30-some-odd years, 38
yes,
years?
I've got you beat, I'm afraid. But
yeah. I'm a close second coming in. So I've always felt very comfortable doing music in the church. So,
and it is about passion, isn't it?
It is.
Sometimes people say, well, it's all talent. But lots of talented people with no passion.
Yes.
And it doesn't work.
Yes.
I can remember my own son. I was sitting in a room with his counselor, who was probably some ex-coach somewhere, you know. And this man looks at my son, and he had just come home from a summer at Northwestern University, a music camp. And John's sitting there saying he wanted to go into music. And the guy looks at him and he goes, but is it your passion?
Right.
You know, and I thought, wow, that's a great question for someone to be asking. Because he was talented, he played well, you know, he was always the first chair in the band and all these kind of things. But was it your passion, you know,
right.
Or should your passion be something else? This is a tough business to be in when it's not your passion.
It is a tough business.
Because in the church world, of course, we've got every pastor and every bishop and, you know, every volunteer choir member just absolutely driving us crazy. And
exactly.
So it's, except here in Orange County where they're all wonderful.
Oh, yes.
But out there in the other parts of the world, no, that's... It's true. It's a very tough business, and there's a lot of work to do. So when did you wind your way to, when I first met Matthew, he was a music director at Holy Family Cathedral.
Right.
So I didn't know this wild background.
No.
I'm just learning it for the first time. That's excellent.
I met the rector, Father Art Holquin, I think at an NPM convention, National Pastoral Musicians Convention, I think in the early 80s. I just started out. They sent me to an NPM convention from St. John's, and I happened upon Monsignor Art. He was there, and
that's a very dangerous thing to do.
Yes.
Because when I happened upon Monsignor Art, he had already decided I was going to be the music director
yes.
of Christ Cathedral.
He did.
So that's a very you should stay away from Monsignor Art. He's just dangerous.
He has been just an inspiration to my life. He has basically mentored me all through my entire church career. In the early 80s, he had me come over to the rectory. He was getting rid of all his LPs. He was very excited because this new technology was coming into play, a compact disc. He thought that was just the new thing. And he gave me a bunch of his old LPs. And in that stack was one record of the music of Herbert Howells.
Wow.
And it started this passion in me for the music of Howells. And it's never left me from the early 80s until this very day.
One of my very favorite composers, and we're going to be talking more about Howells in the next segment. So when did you become the music director at Holy Family Cathedral?
1988.
Wow.
And spent 16 years there. And then Monsignor Art moved down to the Basilica in San Juan Capistrano. He spent a year there and then called me up on the phone and said, when are you coming down? And so... I've been there
now. I got
now
that same phone call.
Yes.
And who can say no to Monsignor Art?
Exactly.
He's one of the greatest men I've ever met in my life.
So we've been making good music down there since about 2005.
Indeed, you have. My children's choir, even from St. Louis when I was at that cathedral
yes.
years ago,
yes.
came there and you so graciously welcomed us to the Mission Basilica. But what a great place to make music, huh?
It is amazing.
The acoustics there are fabulous.
Indeed. It's the best place to hear choral music. It's just absolutely stunning. The
well, and not only is your parish choir there and your Spanish choir and all sorts of other things of the parish, but that's the home for D'Angelo's vocal
yes.
ensemble, right?
Yes, they sound absolutely stunning there. It's just a great place to hear choral music. The music just kind of wraps around you. It's a very visceral experience
yes,
at the Basilica.
A couple of concerts I've been to there are just amazing.
Yes.
You know, it's just a great place to make music. And so just like we stole Matthew Gray to make sure that he was also the assistant director of the diocesan choir for Orange. I am the new conductor of that permanent ensemble, but for years Matthew was the conductor of a group calling itself the diocesan choir, who just prepared by event.
Right. Nothing is structured as Dr. O'Meara's group now.
Well, there's no such thing as
it was basically a pit crew. Whenever we needed music for a diocesan a celebration, then we were called into play. But,
well, and I remember seeing programs at cathedral musicians' gatherings, looking at your beautiful programs, thinking, wow, this guy does great music. I can't wait to meet him. And then I finally did. And but now we're proud to say, both of us together, our diocesan choir is 90 voices strong. We're still accepting auditions, especially for men. So if you want to be in on the dedication of that great new cathedral of ours, now is the time to come. But, Mr. Matthew, you do not only do music in an outstanding way, but you're also a teacher of art.
I am. This is my 32nd year of teaching. I have two classes of AP Art History, which is students taking the Introduction to Art class in the high school. If they pass the advanced placement test, they get the college credit. And then I also teach AP Music Theory, same type of format. They take the class, they pass the exam, and they get college credit for music theory.
Well, and if you've ever received a De Angelis Vocal Ensemble program in the mail, you know that Matthew's artistic touch is part of that program, because there's fantastic artwork always associated with the program and the programming of this tremendous ensemble. Art is really a big part of your life. I've been fortunate enough to be a guest in your home, and it's like visiting a museum. There is artwork everywhere, wall to wall. Matter of fact, even a piece of the Matthew Gray collection now resides in my own home. So I'm very grateful for Matthew's artistic touch. But it is a big part of your life, isn't it?
It is.
I'd love to take your art history class. You just need to do it at a time that's not 7 a.m. or something nasty.
Zero period's not for you.
Yeah,
huh?
not my in the morning. Thing, yes. I need a post period, not a zero. But anyway, tell us the next piece we're going to hear. We're going to hear another cut from De Angelis Vocal Ensemble. And what's this one?
We like doing music that's early music, and we like doing contemporary music. And the next selection we have is the setting of the Ave Maria by Robert Parsons. And you're probably scratching your head thinking, who is Robert Parsons? Unfortunately, he drowned in the Thames.
Yes, exactly.
He didn't have a very long career, but the music that he wrote was exceptional. And he had a really difficult time working in the church, because we had Henry VIII, and then we have Edward, and then we have Mary, Queen of Scots, and then Elizabeth. So he had to navigate that period, just
all
like
the composers of that time.
And Byrd did. But Parsons is the little underdog, and this kind of fits in really well with what De Angelis does. It finds music, not that's just kind of obscure, but music that's obscure, but also wonderfully beautiful.
This is a fabulous gem, one of my favorite settings of the Ave Maria. And so here you go, the Ave Maria by Parsons, and we will be right back with a lot more from Matthew Gray and a lot more about next season of De Angelis Voices. Music from the Tower and Matthew Gray. Matthew, thank you for being with us today. We've been talking all about the De Angelis Vocal Ensemble. Last segment, we talked about all about Matthew Gray. That was pretty cool.
Illuminating, huh?
I know it was. I think everybody's always interested in how a musician comes to their profession. You know, it's such an unusual gig for most people out there.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's hard to even describe what we do as musicians, and you as a parish musician, and we found out about your love for art. But all of that is definitely reflected in your wonderful work with the D'Angelo's Vocal Ensemble. So in this segment, I'd like to talk about season 13, may we?
Yes, please.
You have two concerts coming up in the rest of 2017. Tell us what they are.
We've got a Howells birthday program on October 21st. Herbert Howells' 125th birthday is on October 17th. And so we're actually celebrating the birth of Herbert Howells on October 21st. And then December, we are doing a Christmas program.
This is an annual Christmas
program. Indeed. Right? Annual Christmas program will be on December 2nd. And we're doing the Ceremony of Carols by Benjamin Britten.
Wow.
With some other works for harp.
So it's a very nice British season here.
It is.
Well, people are probably saying, now, who is this Herbert Howells? We've been talking a little bit about Howells. We're actually doing a whole program with Stephen Saltz, the sort of the founder of Howells 125. That's coming up. We've been trying to program in some Herbert Howells. Certainly one of my favorite composers. But folks out in radio land might not know that name.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about Herbert Howells and some of the pieces you're doing on that program.
A very, very, very talented composer is Herbert Howells. He has such a unique voice, and I think John would agree with me. When you hear a few measures of his music, you instantly think that's Herbert Howells. Similar to what would happen if you heard a few measures of Morton Lawrence's work, you would go, that's Lawrence. And I think the same thing happens with Herbert Howells. And I still think Herbert Howells is kind of, again, that underdog where people may know a lot of his choral music for the church, but he has actually quite a few pieces of music that are not for the church, which are also just brilliant pieces of music.
And you're going to include some of those on this program, right?
So, again, getting back to that idea of a curated program, I thought instead of just taking and having all of the music of Herbert Howells for an entire program might be a little bit too rich for most audiences. And again, I like to program music that I would like to sit and listen for an hour. So half the program will be music of Herbert Howells, but then the second part of the program focuses on three composers that had an influence on Howells during his life. So they're basically taking and writing little birthday notes to Herbert Howells. The first is Rayfon Williams. Howells met Rayfon Williams at a concert of Elgar. It's the Tale of Gretonius. Is that how you say it? Gretonius. Von Williams is actually taking and premiering his variations on the theme of Tallis that day before the Elgar program.
Wow.
And Howells was in the audience. And there was a vacant seat next to Howells. And after Von Williams got finished conducting, guess who sat next to Howells? It was Von Williams. Howells was so enamored with Von Williams and the performance, he got his program signed by Rayfon Williams.
Isn't that great? Oh, my God.
So there's a great relationship between Von Williams and Howells. So I thought, why not take and have three pieces by Von Williams in the program? So we're doing his Shakespeare songs, which not a lot of people know.
Wonderful pieces.
By Von Williams.
I did those in college.
They're lovely works of music.
Beautiful.
And then we have some works by Stanford on the program. Stanford was Howells' music instructor at the Royal Academy.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing three of Stanford's motets. And then Gerald Finzi, we're doing some of his part songs from the poems of Bridges. And Finzi was a big advocate of Howells' music when Howells was alive. So these unique links to Herbert Howells. So,
well, and that's the kind of creative programming that
yes.
I just so respect in what you do. Anybody else would have just slammed a whole program of Howells together
right.
and called it a day. There's
right.
enough music to do 100 programs in a row.
Right.
And, of course, a lot of the music of Howells is liturgical.
Yes.
You know, so as nice as it is to hear it in a concert format, it works better for me by going over to St. James in Los Angeles and hearing it in Evensong.
Right.
You know, and hearing the Mag and the Nunc. And, you know, it just fits so well into the context of liturgy.
Beautiful.
You know, it's sort of nice to really branch out and do some
yes.
other things. Now, you are doing the Requiem, right?
We
That's
are doing the Requiem.
Of this
we are. And most listeners are familiar with the Requiem. If you're not, you're in for an absolutely beautiful, beautiful piece of music. Howells departs from the traditional Requiem that we would know, actually adds some text from the Book of Common Prayer, kind of similar to what Brahms did with his Ein Deutsches Requiem.
Yes, Brahms. Other people have departed yes. from the actual liturgical text
right.
in that context, and it's an all a cappella
yes.
work. Because we didn't really say this, but DeAngelis is an all a cappella group.
Yes.
This
90% of our programming is
this
acapella.
This year, you're doing some unusual stuff, and we're going to talk about that coming up. But it sounds like the Howells program is just going to be the program to die for.
Yes.
And in the Mission Basilica, which is where it will be, again on October 21st at 8 p.m., it's just going to be the most luscious thing you've ever listened to.
Yes.
So if you'd like a great introduction to this group, here's the concert for you. So go online and check out. There'll be a link to their website on our website, but it's DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble. And you can just Google them probably and find out how to get tickets for yourself to this amazing program. And then, of course, the Christmas program.
Right.
And that's on a Saturday afternoon. That's an unusual time for
it. It is. It's the darkest part of the year in the twilight there of December. So it always seems to fit to do a wonderful program of Christmas music at 2 in the afternoon that people can take and have supper at one of the very many nice restaurants
down in San Juan.
So we're doing a program of music that features the Ceremony of Carols, which Britten originally wrote for boys' voices, three-part boys. And then we're doing a lot of music from American composers that actually feature harp, too. So it's a kind of interesting program. And we have the addition, obviously, of the harp with the Ceremony of Carols. So some other really nice, beautiful things on that program,
including
too.
A couple of pieces by Stephen Paulus.
Yes, his Jesu carols. That's J-E-S-U. Interestingly, and again, this goes back to that whole idea of curated programs, the texts that Britten used for the Ceremony of Carols were medieval texts, medieval prayers. The Jesu carols, guess what? They're medieval texts. Same thing. Four beautiful carol settings, totally different texts than what Britten chose for the Ceremony of Carols. So it's a nice fit to see this early work by Britten, written in the early part of the 20th century, and then see the same idea transposed in an American language by the composer Stephen Paulus with harp and four medieval carols, too.
Who, of course, is still, just died a few years ago.
Yeah, just passed away.
Yes, I was doing his work at a time to be certain that he wrote about the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened to be the very year he died.
Yeah.
And he was very excited that we were doing that piece because it had not been performed a lot, actually written for the Catholic Cathedral in Minneapolis. And so it was very cool to get a little tie to him before his death. But great, great music going on. And this concert, too, is at the Basilica, right?
Right.
2 o'clock Saturday, December 2nd.
Yes.
Both of those concerts at the Mission Basilica. What a great way to start your Christmas season.
Best way to start your Christmas season.
Yes, with beautiful choral music. One of the things I constantly say on this show is get out and here's some live music. DeAngelis has a beautiful recording out.
Yes.
And you can certainly enjoy that. I'm sure you can pick one up at a concert.
Yes.
Can you even buy it on
iTunes,
the website?
CD Baby on the website. We have many resources for you to purchase.
Yeah, so check out DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble. But there's nothing like, no matter how snazzy-wazzy your stereo system is, even Jimmy G probably doesn't have a stereo system snazzy enough to replace that fabulous experience of live sound, live music surrounding you in a spectacular place. This is not your mother's church, this Mission Basilica, is
it? No.
It's so beautiful. The retablo behind the altar, all in gold. It's if you have not been there, it's worth the trip. Go early, stay late.
Yes.
And if you have not heard the DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble there, it too is just an absolute fabulous place to be.
Yes.
So check those both out, and let's hear a little more music, shall we?
Yes.
What do you have for us now, Matt?
Well, we're doing a couple secular pieces by Herbert Howells, and like I said earlier, most church musicians are familiar with the sacred music, but he actually has half a dozen works that are secular in nature. So on the program, we're going to be doing three of them. We're doing The Scribe, which was Walter de la Mare's text that was a tribute to Ray Vaughan Williams at 85. We're doing Inheritance, which was written for the garland for Queen Elizabeth at her coronation in 1955, is it, or 53?
Somewhere along there.
And then the piece that we're going to listen to now is a madrigal. And can you believe this? A madrigal by Herbert Howells. It's called In Youth Is Pleasure.
All right. So In Youth Is Pleasure by Herbert Howells. Perhaps a work nobody's heard. I certainly haven't. But enjoy this wonderful piece, and we will be right back with a lot more from Matthew Gray and a lot more about the DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Music from the Tower. I'm speaking even softer because we're hearing this beautiful Salve Regina in the background. Our guest today is Matthew Gray from the DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble. And this beautiful Salve Regina is another piece we're actually going to hear on concert this year, right?
This will be part of our Sacra France program that we'll actually be taking and singing in the Arboretum here in April.
Right here at Christ Cathedral. We are so happy to have this wonderful ensemble with us each and every year. This will be your third concert in a row here.
Yes.
That's just fantastic. Last year was fabulous, but this year, my little francophones, is going to be all this wonderful French music. But before we talk about that, we must talk about the concert that's coming in February. Tell us about that one, Matthew.
We have Handel's Ode to St. Cecilia, and you're probably scratching your head and thinking, I don't know that work. Well, again, it kind of goes back to DeAngelis taking and finding those chestnuts and gems that are absolute wonderful works of beauty, but people have not necessarily heard them. And Handel, poor Handel, he was in... In London, Italian opera was no longer, his source of income was gone. And so being the entrepreneur that he is, he switched rapidly from Italian opera to English oratorio.
He was a great entrepreneur.
He was a wonderful
entrepreneur. He knew how to make it work.
So same format, three-act opera, but he had just finished Alexander's Feast. It was only a two-act work, and he was having a problem because he knew his English concert goers were expecting three acts. So in 17 days, he wrote the music to the Ode to St. Cecilia, and that was the third piece to make the three act that people were expecting from Italian opera into Alexander's Feast and the Ode to St. Cecilia.
And, of course, we got all those wonderful organ concertos from Handel, too.
Yes.
Because during the intermission,
exactly.
Unlike now, where all the union musicians have to stop playing, they would just sit in the orchestra pit. He would sit down at the organ and improvise these wonderful things. He would sketch out their parts. And so we have 13 wonderful organ concerti from his time in the orchestra. Handel really knew how to sell it.
Oh,
and of
yes.
course, he's the one that wrote the Messiah, the Alleluia chorus from that great oratorio. But he wrote many of these oratorios. But the Handel Ode to St. Cecilia is one, they probably play it in England, perform it there more often.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever heard a live performance
of
it. And we're going to get to enjoy that right here in Southern California on February 10th. 2018, again at the Mission Basilica, right?
Yes,
okay.
And then we've got another concert in the works in Glendale, so we'll have news about that on the website up
okay,
too.
Okay, so a second performance of the Handel? Oh,
yes.
Oh, great. So taken on the road just a little bit.
Just
You've
a little bit.
You've got two fantastic soloists for that work. Tell us who they are.
Yes, Andrea Zomorodian and Dr. John St. Marie. Both folks have sang with DeAngelis, and the Ode to St. Cecilia is a tour de force for tenor and soprano, and they are perfectly matched for this work of art.
Well, you've got
art.
Two sensational vocalists for that.
Yes.
John St. Marie is one of our voice teachers here at the Christ Cathedral in our little academy that we run in August. He's taught now for us for two summers. Students just love working with him. And Andrea and her husband, Chris Gravis, are going to be here on the show in just a couple weeks. Her husband just took over the Episcopal Cathedral. So
yes,
we're going to hear a lot more from that little musical marriage.
Yes.
Right here on Music from the Tower. So they're going to sing. But you have somebody else in that concert, too.
Yes. We have got a hotshot little orchestra. It's called Contrapunctus. And they're amazingly talented group of young musicians that are going to be the string orchestra for the Handel work which we're doing. So they are in their second season. Incredible amount
of
talent.
A nice partnership between those two ensembles.
Wonderful partnership. And just amazing artistry and really, really easy to work with. And a lot of scholarship there, too. They really take seriously the idea of early music. So it's a really good fit with
D'Angelo. And what else is going to be on that program?
They're probably going to do one of the string concerti of Handel and then the Ode to St. Cecilia, which is about an hour long.
I would suggest a little organ concerto is what I would suggest.
Yes.
Happen to have a few under my fingers.
A bunch of concerti grossi, too, which are just absolutely beautiful.
Oh, wonderful. Well, that's going to be a fantastic concert, also at the Mission Basilica.
Right.
But the one we're most interested here at Christ Cathedral is Sacre France.
Yes.
On April 20th of 2018, right here in our Arboretum at 8 o'clock. And that is going to be an amazing program.
Beautiful
of some gorgeous French music.
Yes.
Tell us what's on that program.
Well, the highlight of the program is the Mass in G minor by Francis Poulenc. Beautiful choral work. Poulenc wasn't necessarily known as being a very devout Catholic, unfortunately, and he had learned that one of his friends had died in a tragic car accident, and it prompted him to take and do what you call, I guess, a pilgrimage to the monastery of Roquemaure. And at the monastery, he had a change of heart. He re-embraced the Catholic Church, and we get this wonderful outpouring of sacred music by Poulenc, just absolutely positively wonderful. And one of those works is the Mass in G.
Wow. And of course, he has the Poulenc motets, the set for Christmas,
right.
The set for Easter.
Easter.
Or Lent, rather.
Yeah.
And I'm able to conduct it in just a couple of weeks. I'm doing the four pieces, the little pieces that he wrote for St. Francis.
Oh, yes.
Which
are
just gorgeous works.
Yes.
We're doing them over at St. Simon and Jude on the vigil of the Feast of St. Francis. So his music does work liturgically, and this Mass is absolutely beautiful. And the Litany to the Black Virgin, also
doing. Yeah, Litany to the Vierge Noire, yes.
Yes, just fabulous music, all right here in the Arboretum on April 20th, 2018. And we don't want you to miss that program, but we have to move on because this D'Angelis group does all sorts of stuff. Tell us a little bit about your mission music project.
Yes, we are so proud of our mission music project. Obviously, we're based at San Juan Capistrano, and that is the birthplace of Orange County, 1776. So we have a really amazing educational outreach program for fourth graders in Southern California. Every fourth grader in California, their social studies curriculum is portion of it is based on California missions. And so we had the idea, instead of taking and building a sugar cube mission, to perhaps maybe take and blend together the social studies curriculum with music from that period. And it has become a tremendous success. Teachers love it. Students love it. Districts like it because it links together the elements of the Common Core, which you may know about, provides the kids with good opportunities to think critically. But more importantly, they actually get to hear music from the period of Alta California from 1776 to about 1850. And so
and
it kind of makes it come alive.
And do they learn these in the classroom on their own and then come to you? Or
well,
how does this work?
The thing that we didn't want to do most, and this is not to be disparaging, but a lot of arts organizations will go in, do a show, and leave. We don't like that model. And since I'm a teacher, I didn't think that was the best way to educate the children also. So We actually come in, we work with the children, we actually teach them the songs, we have a curriculum that goes with that, and then we come back and we give a performance of the music for the children, and they get to perform then again, and then the culminating project is to have them come down to the Basilica, and they actually sing the music that they've been working on throughout the year at the Basilica. That's the big, big treat for them.
What a treat, and what an educational opportunity for these young people. Well, we're certainly hoping to have you here at Christ Cathedral. When we open our cathedral, we're hoping for a mission exhibit. We talked about that with Father Christopher on a previous show, and we're certainly hoping that somehow D'Angelo's Vocal Ensemble will be part of that exhibit in a concert form and perhaps even make a recording. Or what are some of
the other hopes
for the future of this ensemble, Matt?
Well,
what's next on the horizon?
I think
we got season 13 all knocked off here.
We're hoping to take and do more professional recordings. I think a professional ensemble needs to record, so we'd like to actually have opportunities to do that and have opportunities for the public to hear our unique voice. We definitely want to take and do a tour of the California missions and bring mission music to all the missions in California.
Wouldn't that be a rebirth
of the musical heritage from California would be something we're interested in. And then taking and starting to branch out from Orange County. I mean, it's wonderful that we'll be up in Glendale for Handel and we'll be at Christ Cathedral in April. And every time we get out of San Juan, it allows us to take and build and to help the organization grow. Because we need to keep growing in order to be successful.
Exciting projects coming up. You'll hear about the D'Angelo's Vocal Ensemble more and more. If this is a new group to you, you will want to get down to one of those concerts and become acquainted. If it's a group you already know and love, bring a friend to one of their concerts and get yourself to the mission or here to Christ Cathedral to a concert really soon. All this information will be on our website. Matthew, thank you so much for
You're
being
welcome.
On the show.
Thank you.
And for sharing all of that you do with that, with your church job, with the diocesan choirs. We are so happy to have had you here. We're going to end with a little piece, the O Salutaris.
By Pierre Villette. Again, same paradigm as before, trying to find the beautiful pieces of music written that have that idea, again, of beauty and uniqueness. Really tremendous voice in the choral
world. And this is also
world.
For the Sacre France program
yes,
right here
at Christ
Cathedral.
Yes, you hear it live in April, too.
And this is John Romeri saying thank you for being part of Music from the Tower today. This has been a great program with Matthew Gray. And until next time, make sure that you get out and hear some great music in live performance. Thanks for listening.